blind, have low vision, or have another print disability, which makes reading, holding a book, or turning a page difficult or impossible. The content is copyrighted by the respective publishers. For more information, please visit us on the web at nfradioreading.org.
Hello, this is Liz Schaefer, and for the next hour, I'll be reading from the September 25th issue of the East Aurora Advertiser on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Marilla Zoning Board Approves Variance Request by Shelley Ferrullo. The Marilla Zoning Board of Appeals, ZBA, have approved a request from the William and Diane Hine Foundation to rezone a property on Stoll Road and allow more than four unrelated people to reside together in a residence. The property in question is located at 11411 Stoll Road. The 5,400 square foot house has 5 bedrooms, 8 bathrooms, and sits on 10 acres. The property is zoned agricultural. The code says that no more than 4 unrelated people can live together on a property in Marilla. The definition of a family in Marilla's code is, quote, one or more people related by birth, marriage, or other domestic bond, occupying a dwelling unit and living in, as a single, no-profit housekeeping unit. In order to distinguish a family from a fraternity, club, or boarding house, not more than 2 members of the family should not be blood relatives, adopted, or foster children. The application, filed with Marilla on May 6th, says the not-for-profit corporation seeks to utilize the Stoll Road property as a residence for up to 12 unrelated women, 18 years old and older, who have experienced and been victims of abuse. The ZBA met twice to discuss the request, on June 24th and July 30th. The board met again on September 10th and reached a decision after an executive session. The board passed the request with conditions with a vote of 3-1, with board member Chuck Manganiello as the opposing vote. Notes from the meeting say that board member Peter Whitmire recused himself. Those conditions on the request are as follows. The number of allowed residents will be 10. The variance approval is specific to a residence for the restoration of women 18 years of age and older who have experienced and been victims of abuse. Owner to enter into a pilot agreement to pay taxes equivalent to the taxes being paid based upon present assessment. Night shift security to be on the premises from 11 p.m. till 7 a.m. On-site program staff will be available, and there will be at least 4 team members on site during the day. All residents will have quiet hours between 10 p.m. and 7 a.m. and need to be in the residence by 10 p.m. Allowable reasons for being off-site include appointments with other providers, seeking mental health and medical care, and employment. And residents are encouraged to care for their own safety and will be made aware of the emergency buttons to call 911 in an emergency. There will be cameras on the property and in certain areas of the home to ensure safety. Law enforcement will have access to the cameras and will patrol the residents. Personal vehicles will not be allowed. All transportation will be provided by the agency. This application will be on a town board agenda for approval in the future. A New Refuse Providers Guidelines for the Village by Sean Cunningham. New Green Waste Management 96-gallon garbage and recycling totes have been dropped off at around the village over the past week as the village's refuge contract is slated to switch from Modern Disposal Services next month. Here's what residents and businesses need to know about the upcoming changes. Waste Management's contract becomes effective on October 6th. Until that date, residents and businesses are asked not to use the new totes. Village Administrator Shane Krieger said the new totes are a result of the company looking to be able to collect with one individual operating a truck with a lift arm. Krieger said that companies have been looking to move down this method to keep costs down. The waste management totes must be used, and other garbage cans will not be collected. Loose garbage and recycling left outside the cans will also not be collected. Additionally, totes will need to be brought to the edge of the curb. The totes are property of waste management. More information on maintenance and repair requests will be provided. In a follow-up interview, Krieger said that the bid the village accepted only included the 96-gallon totes, but officials are considering reapproaching waste management for smaller receptacles for residents with mobility issues. If residents have medical conditions or are older and unable to maneuver the containers provided, they can call the village office or the Department of Public Works, and their name will be added to the list of for a potential alternative. In the meantime, Krieger said that he hopes the neighbors will help. That neighbors will help their neighbors if they are experiencing difficulty in maneuvering the new totes. Krieger said that with regard to existing recycling totes, they are recyclable and can be disposed of in the new recycling bins. Existing garbage cans will likely to be broken up and disposed of. Krieger also suggested using sites like Facebook Marketplace to allow residents from surrounding municipalities to purchase them. Acceptable recycling items include paper, flattened cardboard, plastic bottles, and containers. Glass bottles and containers and empty tin, aluminum, and steel cans. They should be clean and dry. Recyclables should be loose, not bagged. Some residents will see a new day for garbage pickup as the company is aiming to have collection completed in 3 days instead of the 5-day cycle that Modern has been using. The current schedule will remain in place until October 3rd. Krieger said that Waste Management will be mailing out flyers to all affected businesses and residences prior to the October 6th rollout. At the time of publication, the village is still waiting to receive the flyer for approval before it is mailed to the public. Residents will also be allowed to dispose of 3 large items monthly. Those items must be put out on the 3rd week of the month for pickup only. A flyer with a calendar for 2026 pickup dates will be sent to all residents. There's going to be some growing pains with this, Krieger said. But in other news, the village amended the solid waste code to reflect some of the requirements Waste Management has instituted. Chief among them is that both the 96-gallon garbage and the recycling totes are not to exceed 100 pounds in weight when filled. Additionally, in addition to the yard waste and tree collection that occurs between April and October, without prior notice, residents may drop off yard waste and tree parts at the Department of Public Works during the posted yard waste hours. This can be received loose or in biodegradable bags. The Village Board will meet again at 7 p.m. on Monday, October 6th at the Aurora Municipal Center on Oakwood Avenue. Local tax exemption for volunteers accepted in Elma by Sean Cunningham. The town of Elma is looking to incentivize volunteer firefighting and ambulance work with the adoption of the first local law of 2025, a real property tax exemption. The law was approved unanimously with the 4 members present voting in favor. Deputy Supervisor Tracy Petrosi led the meeting as Supervisor Wayne Clark was absent. Elma is covered by 4 volunteer companies, Blossom, Elma, Jameson Road, and Springbrook. The law states that real property owned by an enrolled member of an incorporated volunteer fire or ambulance organization residing in the town of Elma shall be exempt from taxation to the extent of 10% of the assessed value of such property, exclusive of special assessments. The enrolling organization must provide service within the town, and the real property subject of the exemption is the primary residence of the volunteer. If the property is not used exclusively as a residence, the non-residential portions are subject to taxation. The volunteer must have been an enrolled member for at least 2 years. An application for this exemption must be applied annually with the town assessor's office on or before the applicable taxable status date. Eligibility for the exemption will require each volunteer to receive 50 service award points at the end of the year. These points are tallied in the Elma Town Fire Protection District Service Award Program for all but Springbrook, which has its own service program as it is in a separate fire district. Points can be earned by attending meetings, drills, and calls throughout the year. At the end of each year, the point total resets for the purpose of the exemption. Volunteer members who have been active for more than 20 years of active service are granted the 10% exemption for the remainder of their life, as long as their primary residence is located in the town. Unremarried surviving spouses of volunteers killed in the line of duty are also entitled to continue to receive the exemption. Unremarried surviving spouses of volunteers with at least 20 years of service are also entitled to continue receiving the exemption until they remarry. Councilmember Daryl Nolan, who is a member of the Jameson Road Fire Company, abstained from the vote. The board approved a bid for the asbestos abatement at the Old Highway Garage for $6,500 from United Precision Construction Services, LLC. Only 2 bids were received, the other being $8,400 from Gitter Dunn of Western New York. Nolan voted against the bid, stating that he would prefer to have the building sold without any work being done. Highway Superintendent Howard Deal said that his department had been cleaning up the area around the old highway garage in anticipation of the coming construction. Rubbish pickup starts on October 6th, and brush pickup starts October 20th. The town adopted new rules to what is allowed for both rubbish and brush collection. Brush service is intended for homeowners to clean up their yards of branches and brush. No lot clearing of any kind will be accepted. The full list of guidelines is available at the town clerk's office. Questions can be directed to the Elmwood Highway Department by calling 716-652-2515 or emailing highwaydpt@elmanewyork.com. A 2002 Mack roll-off truck from the Highway Department that was declared surplus was auctioned off for $8,300. In addition, $5,700 was received for three roll-off containers. In August, the Building Department issued 36 permits, collected over $8,000 in fees, and the estimated value of construction was listed at over $1.6 million. The Board approved an intermunicipal agreement with the Town of Marilla regarding the sharing of the dog kennel service. The Board approved an intermunicipal agreement with the Town of Colden with respect to assisting their Water Department. According to the agreement, Colden has employed a new water worker that will take over duties as Class D operator. This worker is required to work under the guidance of a registered Class D operator for up to 1 year. As a result, the Elmwood Water Department has agreed to provide guidance with occasional visits to Colden as necessary. The Board approved a business use permit for QOL Medical at 5763 Seneca Street, first floor. QOL Medical is a specialty biopharmaceutical company, and the space will be used for virtual meetings with clients. A business use permit was issued for Herd Creations LLC at 2827 Transit Road. Owned by Joe and Heather Murphy, the company specializes in direct-to-film printing on custom apparel. Formed out of the COVID pandemic, the company has been operating out of the couple's home in West Seneca. The permit lists their hours of operation to be Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. The board unanimously passed a resolution in support of the U.S. Congressional Energy Choice Act. That puts the town of Elma on the list of people that oppose mandated natural gas bans such as new construction, Petrosi said. Jennifer Kahn was approved as the new clerk for the Zoning Board of Appeals. She serves as the Town Justice Robert Pierce's court clerk. The board failed to reappoint Town Assessor James Chisholm to a new six-year term. The board was deadlocked with council members Joseph Macaluso and Leroy Kupchick voting no. The town is required to appoint an assessor by October 1st. It was announced during the meeting that Water Superintendent Brian Fiden Sr. was retiring after service to the town for 42 years. His successor has not been named and at the time of the publication. A public hearing was set to discuss spending of the Federal Community Development Block Grant. It will be held on October 22nd at 7 p.m. at the Elma Town Hall. Deputy Greg Kent of the Erie County Sheriff's Office Community Engagement Team gave the statistics for calls handled by the department during the month of August. In total, the ESCO responded to 610 calls in the town of Elma. These included 15 car accidents, 7 burglary residents or reports, 21 calls for assistance, 40 first aids, 48 traffic stops, and 3 domestic incidents and 2 DWIs. The Fall Festival will be held on Saturday, October 4th from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m. at the Elma Village Green Park on Bowen Road. The event is open to all residents and will feature hayrides, cider, donuts, and pumpkins. The board will meet for a special budget work session at 7 p.m. Wednesday, September 24th. A regular work session will be held at 6 p.m. Wednesday, October 8th, and the regular meeting will be at 7 p.m. Wednesday, October 22nd. All meetings will be held at the Elma Town Hall on Bowen Road. You're listening to a reading of articles and features from the East Aurora Advertiser on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Reckless driving complaint leads to multiple felonies. A 32-year-old male from South Wales was charged with 4 felony complaints, including DWI, following a report of reckless operation of a motor vehicle on Emery Road on Tuesday, September 16th at approximately midnight. According to the report, an Emery Road resident stated that a vehicle had been racing up and down the road and revving its engine for the last 15 minutes. The resident further stated that this was not the first time this has happened. The vehicle was observed to be parked in an abnormal manner approximately 15 west of the paved parking lot near the Emery Park ski lift. The vehicle has its hood locked in the upright position. The report says a male was walking away from the vehicle and towards Patrol. He was reportedly observed to have a staggered gait and looked disheveled. Contact was made with the individual next to the parking lot entrance, and no other individuals appeared to be in the area of the vehicle. The subject identified was Joseph Pick. He was recognized from a previous arrest earlier in the year in which he was operating the same vehicle. When Pick was told he had met the responding officer before, he appeared confused and grew frustrated. The report says his demeanor was hostile and argumentative. Pick was reportedly asked if he was all right, as it appeared that he and his vehicle had gone off the road. Pick initially denied having operated the vehicle and stated he was just trying to walk home. He also declined a medical evaluation. Pick was detained. The scene of the accident was investigated. Tire marks were observed both in and off the roadway in the grass that led to the vehicle's resting position. It was determined that the vehicle was traveling westbound on Emory Road before failing to navigate the curve in the road properly, likely due to imprudent speed. The vehicle was observed to have keys in the ignition, however, the vehicle's engine was not running. Standard field sobriety tests were administered to Pick in the parking lot. During tests, Pick reportedly became agitated, argumentative, and uncooperative multiple times. He was placed under arrest and taken to station for processing. A breathalyzer was administered with a BAC of 0.20%. When asked how he lost control of his vehicle, Pick stated that the curve is weird and that there is a bump in it. Pick was issued 4 felony complaints, included aggravated DWI with a previous conviction within 10 years and aggravated unlicensed operation of a motor vehicle in the first degree. Pick was also issued 6 traffic violation citations. Pick had a valid warrant out of the New York State Police, Alma Barracks. Contact was made with NYSP, who stated that the town justice in Alma would be releasing Pick on his own recognizance and that he was advised to appear in the town court this week. Pick was released on an appearance ticket. The vehicle was towed from the scene with a 12-hour hold placed on it. Personal injury auto accident. A 24-year-old male from Attica was taken to the hospital following an accident that occurred between a motorcycle and vehicle at 7 p.m. on Sunday, August 31st on East Main Street. Upon arrival, the driver of the vehicle, a 49-year-old female from East Aurora, and the registered owner of the vehicle, a 77-year-old female from East Aurora, were observed to be in their vehicle in the driveway. The vehicle had heavy front-end damage. The motorcycle driver was located in the wooded area on the north side of the roadway near his motorcycle, which had sustained heavy damage. The motorcyclist reportedly appeared to be seriously physically injured, with mainly lower extremity injuries and possible hip and back injuries. First responders were able to retrieve the motorcyclist from the wooded area and transported him to ECMC. 2 witnesses were interviewed who stated that they observed the accident via their dash cam footage, which was subsequently emailed to the police department. The 2 occupants of the vehicle stated that they were dropping off a piece of mail at their mailboxes and attempted to pull across Route 28 to their driveway. The driver stated that she looked both ways but did not observe the motorcycle traveling eastbound before striking the motorcycle with the front end of the vehicle. The dash cam shows a similar series of events. Several car parts, gouge marks on the pavement, and torn up grass on the dirt on the north side of the north side show the area of impact and trajectory of the motorcycle post-impact. The Erie County Sheriff's Office Auto Investigation Unit was also called to assist. The scene was marked out and photos were taken. The vehicles were towed from the scene and are being held until the investigation is complete. In a supplementary report, medical personnel at ECMC were spoken to regarding the motorcyclist's injuries. He was reported to have a fractured tibia and broken fibula, with road rash to the right side of his body. No life-threatening injuries were observed during testing. Property found. During a premises check at Hamlin Park on Monday, September 15th, a bicycle was discovered by the swings. The bicycle was placed in the back hallway of the station with a complaint card attached to wait for pickup. Harassment. A possible physical domestic incident was reported at 7 p.m. Thursday, September 18th. According to the report, a 36-year-old victim, female, and the listed victim was observed outside near her vehicle. The victim did not appear hurt, nor did she report any injury. The victim was at her mother's house with her 7-year-old son and 6-year-old nephew. The mother has a 72 year-old female roommate who is listed as the subject. The children were reportedly eating a snack at the dinner table with the subject while the victim was speaking to the a friend on the phone on the rear deck. One of the children was fooling around at the table and was told by the subject to stop. The child ran out to the deck to tell the victim about the incident. The victim became upset with the subject and threw out the rest of the snacks, telling the children the snacks that the children were eating. The subject began yelling at the victim, and a verbal argument ensued. The victim reportedly stated that she was going to take her child with her. The subject did not want the victim to take her child in her upset state and used a hand to push against the arm of the victim, yelling, "Stop." The victim left the residence and called the police. The victim stated that she did not want to press charges, and the subject was advised that the victim had a right to her child regardless. They stated that they understood. The victim stated she wanted to clear her head at her friend's house in Depew after grabbing some personal items inside the residence and would return for the child in the morning. A domestic incident report was completed and filed. Police car damaged. A police officer responding to a possible residential structure fire on Davis Road struck a deer while traveling westbound on Oakwood Avenue. The incident occurred between South Willow and Hamburg Streets at 10 p.m. Thursday, September 18th. According to the report, the damage to the vehicle was examined. A large incident was observed in the front fender near the wheel well of the passenger's vehicle. The fog light plastic cover was also damaged. The vehicle was still operational, and the officer continued to respond to the call. The deer had run off after being struck. The incident was caught on the vehicle's dash cam. Use caution when burning outdoors. Everyone is urged to exercise extra caution before any outdoor burning. Current warm and dry conditions are causing an increased fire risk across New York State, and the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation encourages people to put safety first, not leave fires unattended, and extinguish all fires fully. Daily fire danger ratings may fluctuate based on weather, but the overall risk is elevated beyond what is typical for this time of year. These conditions are expected to continue through the month of September and may persist into October. With the fall foliage and dry autumn season beginning, fire risk will continue to be a concern. Since August 1st, DEC Forest Rangers have responded to 53 fires burning nearly 26 acres of land. Approximately half of those were caused by campfires that broke out of their containment and were not extinguished properly. People often think a fire has been extinguished, but in dry conditions, hot embers burn into the ground where they can smolder for days or even weeks before detecting as a wildfire. To properly extinguish a campfire, pour copious amounts of water on the fire, stir any remaining coals into the mixed water in the fire bed, and make sure the fire is cool to the touch before leaving it. Wildfire prevention tips. Completely extinguish all campfires. Fires should be doused with water and stirred to mix ashes and water until ashes are cool to the touch with the back of your hand. Remember, if it's too hot to touch, it's too hot to leave. Never discard ashes from campfires, charcoal, grills, wood stoves, or cigarettes on vegetation or the forest floor. Refrain from smoking in areas with flammable vegetation or organic soils. Cigarette butts and ashes should never be discarded in the forest, regardless of location. If you carry it in, carry it out. Do not drive off established roads or park on top of vegetation. Hot mufflers and catalytic converters can ignite vegetation that touches them. When operating chainsaws, generators, and other power equipment, ensure it has a functioning muffler with a spark arrestor. Have supplies, shovel, water, fire extinguisher to deal with a fire if one should start. And never leave a fire unattended. For more information, visit dec.ny.gov/things/2/do/camping/fire/safety. Editorial. Slim selection this November. Election days is in 6 weeks, and we are discouraged to see that so many Republican and conservative candidates are running uncontested. Democratic Party leaders aren't even offering a choice in most local elections. Erie County Sheriff John Garcia is running on the Republican and conservative lines. Nobody is challenging him on the Democratic line. Erie County Legislator Frank Todaro is running on the Republican and conservative lines, and nobody's challenging him on the Democratic lines. Erie County Legislator Lindsay Lurigo is running on the Republican and conservative lines, and nobody's challenging her on the Democratic line. Supervisor Wayne Clark is running unopposed on the Republican and conservative lines. Jay Macaluso, Tracy Petrosi, and Jim Maltzuski are all running for two seats on the Alma Town Board under the Republican or conservative lines. The only candidate for highway superintendent, Howard Deal, has both these lines as well. Nobody's running on the Democratic line. Jeffrey Hack is running uncontested for supervisor in the town of Holland on the Republican and conservative lines. Lynn Roth and Daniel Letito are running for the town board on Republican and conservative lines, and nobody is running on the Democratic line. However, Jill Dix has been endorsed by the Democratic, Republican, and conservative parties for town clerk, and Jason Simmons has been endorsed by the same three parties for highway superintendent. They are both running uncontested. Supervisor Earl Gingrich Jr. is running unopposed on the Republican and conservative lines. Anthony Sebastiano and Randy Reichart are running for two seats on the Marilla Town Board under the Republican and conservative lines, while Anthony Servi is running for the town justice on the same party lines. No candidates are running on the Democratic lines. Terms have expired in Wales for town supervisor, highway superintendent, town, and town clerk in Wales. All of the incumbents who are currently in office, Tim Howard, William Swires, and Melinda Eaton, are running on the Republican and conservative lines. Don Gallo and David Newman are on the Republican and conservative lines, running for two seats on the town board. Nobody is representing the Democratic Party. In the town of Aurora, The town of Aurora seems to be the exception. James Granville is running for the town justice on the Democratic and Working Family Party lines, while Anthony Rupp III is on the Republican and conservative lines. Justice Jeffrey Marcello is running again on all four party lines. Karen Dojnik is running for town clerk on the Republican and conservative party lines, while Jean Viger is running on the Democratic and Working Families party lines. And there are three candidates running for two positions on the Aurora Town Board. Jessica Armbrust is running on the Democratic and Working Family lines. Joseph McCann is running on the Democratic and Conservative party lines. And Scott Solani is running on the Republican and Conservative party lines. Supervisor Charles Snyder is running unopposed on the Republican and Conservative lines. And Highway Superintendent David Gunner is running uncontested, but he has the support of the Democratic, Republican, and Conservative parties. There will be a polling place open in each community on October 25th through November 2nd for early voting. All regular polling stations will be open during Election Day on November 4th. We imagine in the local area turnout will be low considering most local ballots aren't offering a choice, but it's still important to show up and participate in the process. Perhaps some of the more progressive candidates will be willing to try in 2026. Reader's opinion. Don't take eyes off state Democrats. Dear Editor, head for the hills, hide your women and children, the devil incarnate and his minions are in control of our country. At least that's what some of our contributors would have you think. Donald Trump was fairly elected as our president, and guess what? The people knew what kind of person he is, as he already served one term as president. And yet, we chose him over what Democrats had to offer. Perhaps because he gave hope, pride, and confidence that we do matter, something that was lacking in the previous administration. I do notice something that is lacking in the letters to the editor, that is the lack of criticism of our state government, except by some of our Republican elected officials. Since 2019, the Democrats have had control of the Assembly, Senate, and Governor's office, and what have they done for us? Are our streets safer? Are our homes safer? Has our tax burden been reduced? Is our state a magnet for new businesses and industry? Does anyone think that we have a chance of fair and balanced representation in Albany with the current one-party rule? No to all of it, but hey, they're Democrats, not Republicans, so they can do no wrong. Robert Gardner in Marilla. Learning lessons from poetry past. Dear Editor, Pastor Martin Niemöller, a German Lutheran clergyman during the 1930s, was an ardent follower of the Nazi Party. He later deeply regretted his belief in fascism, and after renouncing his affiliation with it, he spent years in concentration camps, barely escaping execution. In 1946, he wrote a poem which became famous the world over as a universal cry for tolerance in the face of tyranny. The poem goes like this. First they came for the socialists, but I was not a socialist, so I did not speak out. Then they came for the Then they came for the trade unionists, but I was not a trade unionist, so I did not speak out. Then they came for the Jews, but I was not a Jew, so I did not speak out. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak out for me. Over the past few weeks, I have imagined an updated version of Pastor Niemöller's words, one that could apply to today in America. And I humbly offer it here. First, they came for the immigrants and the people of color, but I was neither, so I did not speak out. Then they came for the scientists and educators, but I was neither, so they did not speak out. Then they came for the LGBTQ, the woman leaders, and the artists, but I was none of those, so I did not speak out. Then they came for the religious minorities, the homeless, and the disabled, but I was none of those, so I did not speak out. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. For those of us who can, we must keep speaking out for freedom and justice for all. May nothing stop us. Judith Geer, Holland. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the East Aurora Advertiser on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Reader's Opinion. MAGA's corruption is making U.S. unrecognizable. Dear Editor, the level of hate in this country has risen to a level I find intolerable. Too many in the MAGA movement listen to the unadulterated hate speech coming from the far right. The Christian nationalists, the neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and other hate-based groups. The most openly flagrant spreader is our president, or as I call him, hater-in-chief. This is deplorable. The hate that comes from this administration is gladly accepted as normal. Any disagreement with our want-to-be supreme leader is called leftist radicalism. There's not much to be done with neo-Nazis and white supremacists. That is their credo. But the popular Christian nationalism is definitely not the Christianity that I learned growing up in Southern Baptist Church, and they are pretty extreme for Protestants. I find nothing these Christians espouse to be particularly moral or ethical. The United States was not, is not, never was, and hopefully never will be, a Christian nation. It was not founded on Christianity. In fact, the First Amendment guarantees freedom of religion. The framers of our Constitution were deists, not necessarily Christians. The phrase, "In God We Trust," does not appear on the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution. It was first used for the 2-cent coin minted in 1864. The phrase didn't appear on paper money until 1957, nearly 100 years later. "Under God" was added to the Pledge of Allegiance in 1954 by President Eisenhower, not the Founding Fathers. They didn't even write the pledge. The Bill of Rights guarantees certain rights to the populace: freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom to peacefully assemble, right to bear arms, freedom from unreasonable search and seizure, right to speedy public trial, and right to counsel, right to trial by jury, prohibition of excess bail, fines, and prohibition of cruel and unusual punishment. But the Bill of Rights is being systematically eroded by this administration. The far right seems to only honor the Second Amendment. There is no question in my mind that our government has been overtaken in a bloodless coup by those that do not honor our founding documents. This president is a little different from other fascist leaders. You know them: Vladimir Putin, Kim Jong-un, Xiao Jinping, Benjamin Netanyahu. Fascist ideology espouses extreme nationalism, opposition to democracy, rule by dictator, militarism, and the use of violence and intimidation to silence dissent, and this administration's favorite, the total lack of respect for human rights. That certainly describes the new USA. I will be called a leftist radical for my opinions, probably worse, but I am a proud American, a political moderate, defender of the First Amendment. I am confident the FBI has an open file on me. I surely risk deportation to CCOT or Gitmo. I could be incarcerated in alligator Alcatraz, but I still believe in the Constitution, its found principles, the First Amendment, and I am tired, so tired of the MAGAs corrupting our government. Langworthy continues to fan the flames. Dear Editor, Nick Langworthy has taken Joe McCarthy of the 1950s as his exemplar. Fear-mongering wins votes. On X, after the murder of Charlie Kirk, Nick Langworthy posted, "The extreme left chose today to not to fight a war of ideas, but to indulge their derangement through cold-blooded murder, seeking to silence his voice forever." Not very coded language for "all Democrats are assassins." His posting is counterfactual and divisive. Instead of calm, it inflames the mob toward kind revenge. It's wrong. Langworthy's illegitimate exploitation of a tragedy to gain a little approval from the extreme right is petty. In its It is consistent with a political animal sensing the way the wind blows. It is inconsistent with a person of integrity looking for unity in America. Vilifying Democrats at every turn is not a recipe for unity. Langworthy condemns people as opposed to their ideas. He accuses others of his own bad behavior. We need a congressman who is less afraid for his job and more afraid for America's future. Jim King, Republican candidate for Congress. Exploring the need for affordable housing in East Aurora. In August, the Village of East Aurora was awarded an Erie County Municipal Planning Grant of $50,000 to conduct a land use feasibility study for the two properties that the village purchased from Fisher Price in 2022. One plot of land, a parcel of about 21 acres, is located on the northeast corner of Girard Avenue and Buffalo Road. The other's lot is at the northern border, containing about 14 acres of land, situated east of the Stone Gate Homes along Buffalo and Bowen Roads. This smaller parcel is located just outside the village border in the town of Aurora. The purchase price was $1.4 million. 3 years ago, village officials said the purchase was made to develop affordable housing, and the grant will cover the cost to conduct the preliminary work that will assist developers who may bring proposals to the village for consideration. Dan Castle lives in East Aurora, and he is the County Commissioner of Environment and Planning, which is the county department that awarded the grant. He said that the information that the feasibility study will gather will lay the groundwork for potential developers. The feasibility study will assist in determining how many units can be placed on the site, what the layout will look like, and how much power is going to the site, and how much traffic will be in the area, Castle said. If this upfront work is done, the village can share it with the developer, and it will help keep the cost down for the developer. Castle said that the study will also determine other restrictions on the land, such as wetlands. There are wetlands on this parcel because newer homes on Hillcrest, etc., were built up and forced the water to lower elevations, Castle said. Code enforcement officer Elizabeth Cassidy confirms that the property contains wetlands. Cassidy said that the development near a federal wetland can occur without regulation, and development can even occur within a federal wetland, provided a permit is issued by the Army Corps of Engineers. However, in January 2025, the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, DEC, amended the state's wetland regulations. These properties are potentially impacted by DEC wetland regulations also. DEC wetlands have a 100-foot buffer around the wetland boundary. Any construction within this wetland or boundary would require a permit, Cassidy said. Since this is a newly designated DEC wetland, any development proposed on the two parcels owned by the village would first have to be delineated, boundary and buffer of the wetland mapped on the survey. And then the DEC will have to conduct a freshwater wetland jurisdictional determination to see if any proposed construction impacts in the regulated wetland. Additionally, the Army Corps of Engineers will need to review the proposed construction to determine if the construction impacts the regulated wetland. Paul DiOrlando works at the Erie County Office of Economic Development. He said there are several other communities with developments containing affordable senior housing, such as Orchard Senior Living Apartments in Springville, Alberta Place in Amherst, and Mustachio Garden Apartments in North Collins. Trinity Park Apartments are also in East Aurora on Route 20A. The development in East Aurora offers 33 units for seniors, and there is a waiting list with 30 people/couples on it, DiOrlando said. He considers these to be very affordable, with the income requirement of 50% AMI, area medium income. AMI is determined by the Department of Housing and Urban Development, which calculates the median family income for each specific area using the most recent data from the Census Bureau's American Community Survey. Housing units that would be considered low income in Erie County would be at 60% AMI. So for two people, the income requirements would be approximately $48,480, excluding pension and Social Security. Moderate income housing units would be at 80% AMI, or approximately $64,640 per year for two people. The developer states the number, DiOrlando said. These projects are developer-driven, like market rate housing. The difference is the developer goes to HCR, Homes Community Renewal, to finance it, rather than a local lender. Then they get FHA, Federal Housing Administration, funding. D'Orlando said that the most affordable senior housing units in Erie County are for people over 62 years of age. The apartment consists of a living room, kitchen, bathroom, and one bedroom. Local realtor Jerry Thompson II said the area could use another 40 to 50 condominiums for people from East Aurora who want to downsize and stay within the village. There is a demand for people to buy something at $200,000 after selling their $600,000 house. Thompson said, "We are inventory challenged and everywhere in the region. Anyone looking within a 45-minute radius has to be hyper-competitive to win a bid. We never have had such a high demand for homes in East Aurora." Resident Rita Buckley, 74 years old, has lived in the village her whole life. She likes the idea of affordable senior housing for a local aging population because she said that current residents are being priced out of the area when they go to look for someplace small because properties are expensive. "Even people with medium incomes have been priced out of living in East Aurora," Buckley said. Thompson said East Aurora has been a popular destination for people with second homes. "There are out-of-town buyers buying second homes here and investor buyers who are buying affordable homes and turning them into rentals," Thompson said. "East Aurora has become a destination. Our main street is the hippest main street in Western New York, and I have people coming into my office from out of the area that can buy a $500,000 house in cash just to visit the grandkids in the summer." Mary Durlach, who lives in West Falls, is 73 years old and said that the aging population needs affordable housing and might need supportive care as well. She said that the scope of what the village officials would like to see developed on the land at Buffalo Road and Girard Avenue should be larger to accommodate people as they age. "I have friends now that can't manage to live in their homes," Durlach said. "Moving into an apartment won't change that. There needs to be some level of assistance." Durlach said she looked into living at Maple Terrace in East Aurora, but the maximum income level is set at $35,000 and the wait list is approximately 4 years. "I probably would not afford Fox Run in Orchard Park, and I make too much for Maple," she said. "Because there are no options in East Aurora, I may have to move out to Lancaster." Castle said that villagers like East Aurora are constrained when it comes to development because there is little green space to build something new, and empty nesters are stuck in homes that are too large to meet their current needs. He said the location of the village land is convenient because it is so close to Knox Farm State Park and is walkable to Main Street. This has the ability to get them into something smaller and free up a larger house for a younger family with children. "School enrollment is lower than when my children were young. We moved on to Sycamore in 1990, and there were 10 families that had kids. We all still live there without our kids. I know people don't like change, but we have seniors with no place to go." Thompson said there is a misnomer that there are too many developers in East Aurora, and it's wrong. In the 30 or so years he has been in real estate, he has only seen a few developments. Center Ridge, across from the high school, Polo Grounds on Route 20A, Aurora Mills on Mills Road, and a development by Tom Johnson off of Route 20A that has the East Aurora zip code but is in the Orchard Park Central School District. "There is nowhere to develop in East Aurora," Thompson said. "There is limited land. We don't have any lots left. It's not due to people not wanting to build here. It's due to not having any land to build on. And the town doesn't have sewer infrastructure." Durlach said she is continuing to explore her options before she downsizes. "The timeline depends on my health," she said. "As long as I can drive downtown and pay my bills, I don't have to move. But I've seen that when people don't make the decision, then they lose the ability to decide." You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the East Aurora Advertiser on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Alma Cemetery is cleaned up by aspiring Eagle Scout. A local teenager working on becoming an Eagle Scout has cleaned up a local cemetery. 15-year-old John Wyatrowski has embarked on his Eagle project on September 13th. He chose to clean up Oak Hill Cemetery after being intrigued by rumors of a hidden Civil War cemetery in his hometown of Alma. Determined to find it, he embarked on a journey which proved challenging due to the lack of a specific address and only a general area to explore. After trial and error, he finally discovered the cemetery marked only by coordinates, hidden behind houses on the south side of Seneca Street between Pound and Rice Roads. Located behind 1610 Seneca Street and the northwest corner of the property is the easement. It is a piece of Elma's history that has been forgotten due to neglect. The stone path that once led to Civil War Cemetery site has vanished. The entrance is hidden among trees, bushes, and weeds. The cemetery sits on the banks overlooking Cazenovia Creek. An archway made by a former Girl Scout troop acts as an entryway. Many gravestones are illegible. Some have fallen over, and others have been vandalized by being tossed over the banks. Over the years, fallen trees have destroyed memorial sites and broken gravestone markers. Fortunately, past and present Boy Scout and Girl Scout troops have been involved in maintaining the Civil War Cemetery. It would be great if the historical site were properly marked so people could find it easily. The project that Wiatrowski took on involved various tasks, including trimming, raking, painting, and cleaning up the property with the help of his fellow troopmates, scoutmaster, leaders, and friends. Wiatrowski also managed to obtain the names of all the veterans buried in the small cemetery and discovered what is believed to be the gravesite of Daniel Two Guns, a Native American formerly of Springbrook. During his research at Elma Town Hall, Wiatrowski found additional information and decided to expand on his current sign. On the current sign at the cemetery entrance, he was fortunate enough to receive a contribution from Mr. Norman Tesh, who donated his time, materials, and construction skills to create a beautiful marker. The marker proudly displays all the information Wiatrowski gathered, including the ranking, names, dates of birth, and or dates of death from the Civil War, World War I, and a special mention of Daniel Two Guns. Wiatrowski encourages everyone to visit the cemetery and explore their rich hometown history. However, he advises caution while walking around the cemetery as it is located on the ravine of a creek with a steep drop-off. The rank of Eagle Scout stands as the pinnacle of achievement in the Scouts BSA program, a highly esteemed honor that brings with it a profound sense of pride and accomplishment. To attain this rank, Scouts must meticulously meet the specific requirements, demonstrate leadership, and complete a substantial service project. Among the required requirements are 6 months of active life scout status. Scouts must have been actively involved as a life scout for at least 6 months. Merit badges. They must earn a minimum of 21 merit badges, including 14 specific required ones. Leadership positions. Scouts must hold leadership positions within their troop. Community service project. They must complete a significant community service project. Age. It's important to note that scouts must be under 18 to receive an Eagle Scout rank. To embark on this journey to Eagle Scout, Scouts must first progress through the lower ranks of Scouting, Tenderfoot, Second Class, First Class, Star, and Life. Along the way, they must earn merit badges that cover a diverse range of skills and knowledge, from first aid to citizenship. As Life Scouts, they must demonstrate living by the Scout Oath and Scout Law as testament to their Scout spirit. John is well on his way to obtaining his Eagle Badge and honor before his 16th birthday. Wiatrowski's Scouting trip journey began when he joined Cub Scouts at 6 years old. He progressed to Boy Scouts and joined Boy Scout Troop 618. Throughout his scouting career, Wiatrowski has been active, learning life skills and earning 12 Eagle Merit badges. He's on the verge of completing the last two required badges in the coming months. Wiatrowski said he has enjoyed weekly meetings during the school year, starting with PAC 325 at Annunciation Church and Troop 618 at St. Gabriel's, both located in Elma. These meetings have provided him with a sense of community and camaraderie, fostering his love for scouting. In his free time, Wiatrowski engages in various hobbies, including biking, boating, kayaking, video games, and wrestling on the Iroquois JV team. He's also actively involved in his local church, St. Vincent de Paul, located in Springbrook, where he has earned a special Altar Die medal, which he displays on his uniform. Wiatrowski's remarkable achievement is further recognized by the University of Scouting, which has awarded him the degree of Associates of Scouting. This prestigious recognition was issued by the local Great Falls Council. Fish for free later this month. September 27th will mark the next free fishing day in New York State. This annual Free Fishing Day coincides with National Hunting and Fishing Day, which was designated by Congress in 1972. The day helps encourage people to experience, understand, and appreciate traditional outdoor sports and recreation and abundant natural resources, while also recognizing hunters and anglers for their leadership in fish and wildlife conservation. Free Fishing Days further support Governor Hochul's Get Offline, Get Outside initiative that promotes physical and mental health by helping encourage children and families to put down the phones and take a break from social media to enjoy outside recreational and social gatherings. In addition to designated Free Freshwater Fishing Days, the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation and its partners also hold free fishing clinics throughout the year. Participants learn about local fishing opportunities and are taught about the fish that they can catch, fishing safety, how to cast a fishing rod, aquatic resource stewardship, and the state's fishing regulations. For beginning anglers interested in getting started, the iFish New York Beginner's Guide to Freshwater Fishing provides information on everything from rigging up a fishing rod to identifying your catch and understanding fishing regulations. DEC Places to Fish websites are a reliable source of information for those ready to plan their next fishing trip. The Tackle Box, featured in the DEC official app, Hunt Fish New York, contains the freshwater fishing regulations, boating access, and stocking information within a map-based interface from the convenience of a smartphone. Other features include driving directions to state-operated boat launch sites and an offline feature that allows users to access information when cell coverage isn't available. The Hunt Fish New York app is available for download through Google Play or the App Store. The final free fishing day for 2025 will be on Veterans Day, November 11th. On free fishing days, New York residents and non-residents alike may fish for free without a fishing license. Free fishing day, participants are reminded that although the requirements for a fishing license is waived during free fishing days, all other fishing regulations remain in effect. When not participating in free fishing days, anyone 16 years old and older must have a New York State fishing license to fish. Fishing licenses are valid for 365 days from the date of purchase. More information can be found on dec.newyork.gov. Village Board tables discussion on Main Street building. The East Aurora Village Board met last week to discuss the application for a local landmark presented by the Historic Preservation Commission, HPC. The HPC recommended that 670 Main Street receive designation as a local landmark. The building is undergoing renovations that will add 6 apartments and 2 commercial spaces to the existing building. While undergoing the process, it was brought to the owner's attention that there were historical aspects to consider about the building on Main Street. The HPC is not concerned with the construction going on within the building. We are looking at the building itself and its relationship to the history of East Aurora, Marianne Kalapi said of the HPC. The building was originally the first National Bank of East Aurora. If you think about Main Street, the building with the buff colored brick is certainly a very strong presence in the neighborhood. The HPC has artifacts that relate to the building, including records, telegrams, and files. One artifact includes a telegram that was sent from Washington, D.C. when the bank holidays were declared in 1930s during the Great Depression. The arched windows, moldings and brick characteristics gave the building a strong personality that stands out on the busiest street in East Aurora. Clinton Brown from Carter Development Group expressed the company's approval of the local landmark status, stating that having the support of the village and the Historic Preservation Commission with local landmark designation will help the initiative to claim historic tax credits. Carter Development Group owns the building. The board tabled it to consideration until the next meeting in order to further look into the application. Left Coast Taco on Elm Street has added a shipping container arcade to the restaurant for customers to use while they wait for food. A new scoreboard will be added to the Hamlin Park for East Aurora Little Loop football and cheerleading teams to use. A tree had fallen nearby, knocking out power in local houses, as well as damaging a pole needed for the scoreboard. The town's Department of Public Works will assist in putting up the new scoreboard, possibly involving the use of a rental crane. And the East Aurora Village Board will meet again at 7 p.m. on October 6th on municipal center on Oakwood Avenue. And your what year was the question? Beginning May 1st, there will be dancing every night at the Maple Grove Dance Hall. Round and square dancing will take place with an admission of 40 cents. Playing at the Aurora Theater is The Meanest Man in the World, starring Jack Benny. Admission is 33 cents for adults and 17 cents for children. And the Battle of Bismarck Sea takes place in the United States, and Australian forces sink Japanese convoy ships. I don't know if there's an answer. You've listened to a reading of articles and features from the September 25th issue of the East Aurora Advertiser. We read from the East Aurora Advertiser every Saturday at 10 a.m. Your reader has been Liz Schaefer. Thank you for listening.
Coming up next in the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service, we have a reading of the Niagara Gazette. At noon, we have the Dunkirk Observer. And at 1 o'clock, we have some of our Northtown Bees, including Amherst, Clarence, Cheektowaga, Lancaster, and Depew. Stay with us for these readings and more throughout the day. You're listening to the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. As of this year, our agency has broadcast more than 300,000 hours of radio readings. Volunteer radio readers read newspapers, magazines, and books to area people who are blind or have a print disability, who are provided reading radios. Radio Reading's broadcast signal is provided at no charge by WNED. Radio Reading broadcasts from studios at 1199 Harlem Road in suburban Buffalo. Please let others know about Radio Reading. It's your service. For more information on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service, call 716-821-5555. The following program is intended for listeners who are blind, have low vision, or have another print disability, which makes reading, holding a book, or turning a page difficult or impossible. The content is copyrighted by the respective publishers. For more information, please visit us on the web at nfradioreading.org.
Hello, this is Bruce, and for the next hour, I'll be reading from current issues of the Niagara Gazette on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. From the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, September 27th and 28th.
The following program is intended for listeners who are blind, have low